Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Information, Please is presented each week at this time by H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous Heinz 57 varieties. A four-man board is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information, Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a trifle, and in case of similarity, we'll have to decide who shall be paid. Any question used nets you, with the compliments of Heinz 57, $10 in more stamps and a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If we muff your question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And don't forget that if the expert should miss all three parts of your question, you get, in addition to the Encyclopedia Britannica, a $500 war bond instead of the usual $57. All questions remain our property. Information, Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Goldenfall. And now I present our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
It's a great privilege for us to be here at the Naval Hospital in St. Albans, New York, where we're spending Christmas with some of the veterans. Our broadcast is originating now from the auditorium of the hospital. And our quartet of experts this Christmas night consists of Mr. Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran of the New York Sun, who welcome as their guests Judge James G. Wallace of the New York Court of General Sessions and our old friend, the man radio folks call Master, Mr. Fred Allen. And Fred's just back from Hollywood. How'd you leave the place, Fred?
By request, Mr. Fadiman. I didn't mean that. I've been out there all summer making a picture called It's in the Bag for United Artists. And whenever I make a picture in Hollywood, I find it advisable to leave before the picture, because if the picture ever leaves before I do, that'll probably be my artistic end. Sure.
Well, there's always a job open for you here, Fred.
Thank you.
You know how it is.
I know.
Gentlemen, we're going to begin now with a question from W.L. Schmidt of Atlanta, Georgia. It's a three-part question. Get two out of three. Who made the following classic remarks, and what was the occasion? Now, the first remark is, "That's all right, I've got my gloves on." That's all right, I've got my gloves on. Who said that, under what circumstances? I get a blank look. I get four blank looks. Yeah. Judge, is that your hand?
All right, I'll take a chance if nobody else wants to.
Go ahead.
Beau Brummel?
No, it was Mark Twain. Mark Twain was once visiting the famous painter Whistler, and he was examining an unfinished picture of Whistler's, and Whistler said, "Look out, it's wet." And Mark Twain said, "That's all right, I got my gloves on."
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it?
No, sir.
Didn't even know he was sick.
You can add it to your repertory, friend.
Thank you.
Well, that's one wrong. Now let's get the next two right if we can. Who said, "What would you do for an encore?" And under what circumstances? Mr. Allen.
I think that was Mr. Hammerstein who had the Hammerstein Theater years ago.
That's right. Under what circumstances did he say?
Oh, I believe he used to book more or less sensational acts at the Hammerstein to get out of jail or something and get a week's work there as a headliner without talent if you just had a record. But I believe someone came up and said they would, the party said he would commit suicide on the stage for an act. And the Hammerstein said, "Yes, that's all right, but what would you do for an encore?"
Right.
Incidentally, he didn't work there. P.S., he didn't get the job.
And now the third of these remarks. If I had my gag writers here, you wouldn't talk that way to me. Who said that? Under what? Mr. Allen.
I was having a battle of alleged wits with a Mr. Benny from California, and I believe during the course of the battle of alleged wits, Mr. Benny pulled this alleged witty remark. Or it may have been Hope and Crosby. It was two guys on the radio. I think Benny and I...
Right enough.
Benny,
that's two out of three. Now, gentlemen, try this one from Nina Harter of Brooklyn, New York, and get all. It's a two-part question. This is going to be tough on the audience. We ask you to identify by singing the familiar songs with these rhymes. I'm going to give you the four rhymes, the ends of the lines, and you have to sing the song that, you know, accompanies the rhymes. The first set of rhymes is days, prime, days, time.
Okay, Judge.
She may have seen better days when she was in her prime. She may have seen better days once upon a time. Though by the wayside she fell, she may yet mend her ways. Some poor old mother is waiting for her, who has seen better days.
Thank you, gentlemen. A special credit to that duet, Mr. Adams and Judge Wallace. Now, how about another set of rhymes? Are you in voice, Mr. Adams?
Nope. He's a bit down in the cellar, I think.
Try, here's another set of rhymes. Make up the lines that go to them and give us the song. No, caress, no, yes. Don't get that one, eh? You want the rhymes again?
I got them.
You got them?
That's all I got.
Haven't got the song. Well, it begins with no also. Now, how about that? If I give you... The first line begins with no.
No, no, a thousand times.
I think
no.
You've got it, Judge. How about a little song?
You don't know no a thousand times?
No, I don't. No, a thousand times no.
Can't sing that. My partner doesn't know it.
Would you care to give us a solo, Judge?
Well, no, I don't think so. Not on that one.
In cook
your no, own. No, a thousand times no. That's the way it goes. It's too heartbreaking to suit me.
You cannot buy my caress.
You can't buy, yes.
And how does it go? No, no, a thousand times no. I'd rather die than say yes.
Yes, I never liked that song.
Well, I don't think I'm going to give you full credit on that.
I don't like you.
We have to get these sung.
Oh, you have to sing them, too?
Oh, you have to sing
them. Oh, I didn't know that.
Would you care to sing it?
No, not even right. Then.
In that case, Heinz 57 will send Miss Harder $57 in war bonds and a set of the Britannica, courtesy of the judge.
In the boy.
Next one comes from R.D. Amos of Brantford, Ontario, Canada. Get 2 out of 3. Identify the old-time fighter who wore a mustache. An old-time fighter who wore a mustache. Mr. Adams.
John L. Sullivan.
John L. Sullivan, yes. And what fighter used to burst into tears? Used to burst into... Mr. Curran.
Joseph Paul... Cookie, otherwise known as Jack Sharkey.
That's right. And why did Sharkey burst into tears?
Well, he was a very highly strung athlete.
Nervous type.
On account of the fact that he had been in the Navy.
Now, here's another old-time fighter. This one, after finishing a championship bout in the ring, slugged it out the same night in an alley. He finished the bout in the ring and later on took his opponent on in an alley. Does that go back to any of you, gentlemen? Mr. Allen?
No, I don't. I never went around alleys to see fights. I was always inside. If there was nothing going on inside, I went home.
Oh, I thought you always were found in Allen's alley, Mr. Allen.
Well, I did, but that was a refined crevice that we ran.
Well, it was Greb and Walker. According to the story, they fought it out again outside a restaurant after Greb had won the championship on July 2nd, 1925. Mr. Kieran, does that go back to you now?
Well, I
think it was...
That gives us 2 out of 3.
What restaurant would be up an alley anyway? Then
that's all we're required to get. Now try this one from Mildred Baker of Jacksonville, New York, and again get 2 out of 3. This is a tricky question, gentlemen. Would you want to play cards with these people, and why? Would you want to play cards with Campaspe, C-A-M-P-A-S-P-E? Mr. Adams.
Well,
yes. Yes is right. Now you have to tell us who Campaspe is and why you give it to
him. Cupid and Mike Campaspe played for card for kisses.
Yes. Who paid?
I guess Campaspe.
That's right. And you're quoting Mr. Adams.
Some Elizabethan poet I forget.
Miss Karen?
Lyle.
John Lyle or Lily is the beginning of a famous poem. Now, would you want to play cards with Clark Kent? Clark Kent. Don't you have to know who Clark Kent is? Mr. Allen.
I hardly think so. Clark Kent is Superman, isn't he? His cars would be a little big for an ordinary person to handle.
Well, it might be that, but isn't it also because he has a particular quality that would make playing with him kind of dangerous?
I mean, sparks come out of him?
No. he can see the cards, can't he?
Oh, true. He has radar eyes.
Yeah, X-ray.
Infrared, what does he have?
Something like that.
Infrared eye.
Yeah. Now, would you want to play cards, gentlemen, with Bert Williams? With Bert Williams. Mr. Allen.
Well, I don't think so. He used to do a famous card game and song, but I don't see... he always played more or less solitaire.
Poker.
Poker. Well, he played by himself. It would be poker solitaire, then, wouldn't it? The other people are always mythical, so I don't see how I could play with them unless I was a mythical person.
Did he win or lose, Mr. Allen?
And he always won, as I remember.
Mr. Adams?
He lose.
He lose, yes.
That's right.
He lose. And therefore you'd want to play with him, wouldn't you, on the whole?
I wouldn't. I don't. I scorn such methods when I play cards.
I'll take your answer. That gives us 2 out of 3. Now, try this one, gentlemen, from Milt Hoffman of Minneapolis, and get all on this. This apparently is not too hard a question. According to tradition, or humorous tradition, in what city would a letter carrier's life be unsafe? Judge Wallace.
In Philadelphia.
Why?
Because they might shoot him thinking he was a Confederate soldier.
That's right, Judge. Yes. I see your memory goes back a long way. Now, in what city?
The judge will never hold court in Philadelphia.
I've got to change of venue.
He'll never hold court below the Mason-Dixon line either. In what city would a policeman have to drag a carcass a block? In what city, Mr. Adams?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn is right. And why, Mr. Adams?
Because he was supposed to find the horse on the corner of Joralemon and Kosciuszko Street, and he dragged it along to Myrtle and Fifth because he could spell them.
Very good. By the way, Mr. Adams, I'd like to see whether you're any better. Can you spell Kosciuszko Street for us? I'll spell the street. You spell Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko?
Mm-hmm.
K-O-S-C-I-U-F-K-O.
That's very good, Mr. Adams. Very good. You've got
Freedom Street when Kosciuszko fell.
That's the one. And now, in what city, gentlemen, in what city is conversation severely restricted? According to a humorous verse or doggerel. In what city is Mr. Curran?
Home of the bean and the cod, where the cabots speak only to Lowells and the Lowells speak only to God. Boston.
Boston, right.
No, there are some Lowells in Boston who are atheists and spoke only to other Lowells.
I think it's where the Lowells speak only to Cabot, and the cabots speak only, only to God.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, ordinarily at this point in the program, Ben Grauer brings us a message from the H.J. Hines Company. But tonight, our sponsors have asked me to say a word on their behalf and for the whole Information Please group. I know I speak for them and for all of you when I say that on this night, above all other nights, our hearts are full of the thought of how much we owe to others and how little we can give them in return. To those who at this very instant are struggling grimly that the Prince of Peace may indeed come into his kingdom, we can say only thank you. And to you men of the Navy, our audience gathered here at St. Albans, to you who have already done your share, what can we say but the same 2 words? Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll go on with our program with a question from B.M. Babcock of Omaha, Nebraska. I want you to get 2 out of 3, if you can, on this. It's all about birthdays.
Burglars?
Birthdays. Oh. Not burglars, Judge.
Birthdays. The judge thought he was going to have a holiday here. Burglars.
Who always celebrates his birthday in June? Always celebrates his birthday in June. Mr. L.
Any man born in June.
Indubitably.
I'd love to give you credit on that, Fred. But there is a single individual outside of that who always does. Mr. Curran?
Is that a member of a royal house?
Yes, it is.
King of England?
King of England is right. Why is that, Mr. Curran?
Well, it's just for convenience sake and tradition. They fix it the way they fix the birthdays of horses.
It's suitable for celebration.
Nice weather.
Yes, nice weather. Now, when does a person legally become of age? When does a person legally become of age? This has to be a very definite day. Judge Wallace?
Well, on their 21st birthday, I should say.
Well, I don't think that's exactly right, Mr. Adams.
I think within 30 days of saying.
No, according to my information, and Judge, you may contradict me here, it's on the day before the 21st birthday. Am I right there?
You may be right.
I believe that so. The day before his 21st birthday, he becomes legally of age. Why do all racehorses have the same birthday? Mr. Curran.
Well, that's in order that they may qualify for the different races that are set for 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and upward and they can be entered ahead of time in these races. You have to have a standard birthday. Therefore, in this country, a horse becomes 1 year old on January 1st following the year in which he is foaled.
That's exactly right.
And just for convenience sake.
Just for convenience sake.
Well, could it be that because horses have no calendars and don't know what day it is?
Maybe it's because horses carry tails.
Maybe so. Come back to this program, gentlemen, please. Here's one from Harry Fletcher of Passaic, New Jersey, and he wants you to get 2 out of 3. Identify the performer, famous and votable, who unwrapped a cigar as though he were peeling a banana. Very funny. Unwrapped a cigar as though he were peeling a banana. Who did that in Votable, Mr. Allen?
Might be some clown, Toto, or Joe Jackson, or someone of that sort.
Well, it was Billy B. Van.
Billy B. Van. Billy, a little before my time.
Billy B. Impossible.
There were one or two men, Moses and Billy B. Van, before my time.
Billy B. Van is now in the soap business, too.
Yes, I've used his soap. It's very good.
That's very nice.
Who used
a banana stalk in a scientific discourse? Mr. Allen.
Dr. Rockwell.
What do you use a banana stalk for?
He used to give a lecture on the spine, the effect of certain foods and things on the spine, and he used the banana stalk to illustrate the spine and the vertebrae.
Yeah, very well put. And who produced the bunches of bananas from under his overcoat? As long as we're still on the banana. Mr. Allen.
That was a continental clown, a fellow named Robbins, A. Robbins.
Yes.
Musical clown.
Yes, and very good, too. How'd he do it?
Well, he had collapsible bananas. The bananas had no skins. They were papier-mâché bananas that collapsed in some way. He was able to conceal them under his clothes.
He also produced a lot of other things.
Yes. You're taking all the glamour out of his act, Allen. But
he only asked me about bananas. He produced a train, as a matter of fact, which came in very handy due to the travel shortage, and later the train lasted and Robbins disappeared.
Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one now from Anna C. Coughlin, New York, of New York City, and get all on it. By golly, it's another singing question. I'm going to give you a newspaper headline, which should suggest a familiar song, and you're to sing the song. I'll give you a try to summarize the plot of the song in a newspaper headline. Is that clear? The first headline is Jilted Girl Forgives Betrayer. Jilted Girl Forgives Betrayer. And now, what song would that be that has that for part of its plot, would you say?
That's the curse of an aching
heart. I'll have to get this song for us, Mr. Kieran.
Is the judge going to sing it?
I think he is, yeah.
Aren't you going to sing it? What, $57?
You made me up what I am today?
That's it, Judge.
Well, how about that, Evan?
You made me what I am today. I hope you're satisfied. You drag me down and down until the soul within blasted each and every hope. You fooled me from the start. For though you're not true, may God bless you.
This might bring back the revelers, you know, or something like this.
You boys will never have an audience like this again.
We'll never have this audience again.
It might bring back silent pictures.
I got another one of these, Judge. Broke in Hartford, still believes in sailors, is the plot of this one. Broke in Hartford, still believes in sailors. Now, there's a credulous girl. Does that come back to you, Mr. Adams?
Broke in Hartford?
In Hartford, Connecticut.
Connecticut?
Certainly.
No, I've been that way.
Come back to you, Judge.
Broke in Hartford, still believes in sailors,
yeah.
Huh?
She was just a sailor's sweetheart. Does that come back to you, man?
No.
She was just a sailor's sweetheart, and she loved her sailor lad. But he left her broke in Hartford. He was all she ever had. Still doesn't come back.
Never heard of
it. Never heard of the girl.
She still believes in sailors, and she's true to the red, white, and blue. And although she's barred from the Navy Yard,
Oh, she loves her sailor boy? Positively?
It touches us very deeply. We never heard of the lady.
Nevertheless,
good.
Times 57 cents, $57 to Miss Coughlin on that, and a set of the Britannica. Judge, you're going to be very popular with Britannica users from now on.
Mary Wright. I get one for years.
Mary Wright of Philadelphia sends this one in. It's a 2 out of 3 question. What were or are these advertisers trying to sell? I'm going to give you their slogans, you see, or advertising catchphrases. What are they trying to sell? Wouldn't you like to earn $100 a week, too? Wouldn't you like to earn $100 a week, too? Mr. Curran.
I think that was selling magazine subscriptions.
Not exactly. Somewhat along the same line.
Books?
Well, in part, Mr. Adams.
A writing scheme.
You're very warm, Mr. Adams. It's the International Correspondence School.
Oh.
Use that line. The ICS business course and other courses that they would sell by mail. Remember now, Mr. Kieran? All right. Oh, lift up your head, Mr. Kieran. It's not tragic. I'll see if you can get the next one. When your guests are gone, are you sorry you ever invited them? Who's trying to sell what with that advertising catch line? When your guests are gone, are you sorry you ever invited them? Mr. Allen.
Emily Poe's Book
Emily
of Etiquette.
Emily Poe's Book of Etiquette, that's right.
Yes,
did you ever buy one, Mr. Allen?
No, but I often wished I had. I have one, as a matter of fact. I've read part of it.
What
part? We haven't enough food to go at the manors. I mean... We with that plight, you'd have no time to eat. You're so busy with the equipment, you have no time to bother with the food. But in principle,
now I'm going to give you one more advertising catch line. Does your cigarette taste different lately? Selling what? Mr. Allen.
Well, it's used to concern the Raleigh cigarette, I think, but it's used as a memory test now.
That gives us 2 out of 3. Thanks for the ingenuity of Mr. Allen. Send us on to this question from Violet Fox of New York. Get 2 out of 3 again. Who is described in these lines taken from songs or poems? He's a bit undersized, and you don't feel surprised when he tells you he's only 11. Who is described? Mr. Adams.
Somebody in A.A. Milne's book. Jonathan Joe.
Well, it's a nice guess, Mr. Adams, but it isn't quite right.
Well, it's Milne.
No, I hate to contradict you, but I will. It's from Gilbert and Sullivan. It's the attorney in the Lord Chancellor's dream, remember?
That's right.
And bound on that journey, you'll find your attorney who started that morning from Devon. He's a bit undersized, and you don't feel surprised, and he tells you he's only 11 and so forth.
That's right.
Catching
Nightmare.
On... Pardon?
The nightmare dream.
That's the one. Catching Adams on a Gilbert and Sullivan question is a real triumph. Now, the second one. He don't measure no more from head to toe than he do from side to side. Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams?
That's Mr. Five by Five.
That's five. Yes.
Very good. I thought it was Mayor LaGuardia for a minute.
And now one more of these descriptions. He had a broad face and a little round belly. If you don't get this one, gentlemen, there's going to be Mr. Judge Wallace.
Santa Claus.
Yes, where would you find that description?
On the night before Christmas.
Is that
a visit from St. Nicholas?
Visit from St. Nicholas.
Yes. Who wrote it, Mr. Adams?
Clement C. Moore.
You sure?
Yep.
Mr. Kieran?
That is now being brought up in the Harvard Law Library or some Harvard exhibit.
Yes. You know about that, Judge?
No, I never went to Harvard.
Well, don't boast, Judge. Don't boast. Be democratic. There is a current controversy, as Mr. Kieran reminds us, which would seem to take away the credit from Mr. Moore and give it to somebody else as the author of that poem. I don't know which is right. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one from Dwight L. Hunter of Houston, Texas. Now, gentlemen, you are to imagine yourself in a restaurant. This will be easy for you, Mr. Allen. The waiter has handed you a check, and you find that you have no money. It makes it still easier for you, Mr. Allen. What songs might you sing to express your embarrassment? You don't have to sing these. Mr. Kieran?
I can't give you anything but love, honey.
Very good. That's one. Now, what else? We ought to get two more songs that might... Mr. Kieran again.
All of me, why not take all
of... You want to let Mr. Kieran do all the work, Mr. Kieran?
You mean what the waiter would say, or...
No, what you would say.
Oh.
What would the waiter say?
When you ain't got no money, you needn't come around.
Yes, that's what the waiter might say. Mr. Kieran again?
I got plenty of nothing, and nothing plenty for me.
Perfect.
I might sing All I Got Is Sympathy.
Try this one from Dr. B.H. Goldbach of New York City and get all on it. Who would be on the stage, gentlemen, if the props provided the following meal? If there were, for example, a glass of milk as one of the props, who would be on the stage? This might be an old votable act. Mr. Allen, does that come back to you?
No, I don't.
A glass of milk? It was Avon Comedy 4 that used a glass of milk. I don't know how. Do you remember, Mr.
No,
Allen?
I have no idea.
I remember them, but I don't remember the milk.
I know. The milk wasn't recognized milk. This was a recognized act for many years, but the milk apparently didn't.
It wasn't union.
Well, there was a glass of milk on the stage, apparently. Now, in what act is a ham sandwich part of the routine? Mr. Adams.
I don't know what a ham sandwich. McIntyre and Heath. They didn't have a ham sandwich, they had a ham tree.
Say that's better still. But I'm in an actual sandwich.
I think Burke Wheeler for many years ate a ham sandwich.
That's right. Was it all through the act, Mr. Allen?
Most of the act, and he cried as he sang and ate his sandwich. But apparently didn't work enough to pick up weight. He's about the same size now as he was when he started eating.
And finally, gentlemen, if one of the props is an ear of corn, what act might that be? An ear of corn?
I could be sarcastic here.
That
might be Allen's act. No. Corn could be any comedian,
isn't it? This is just one ear, Adams, not a whole cornfield. Just one ear of corn, Miss Allen.
I don't remember.
Well, Ed Wynn used to...
Oh, yes, with his invention, the typewriter.
Yes, how'd he do it, remember?
Well, in the place of the bar on the typewriter, he ate an ear of corn until the bell rang, and then you knew you were at the end of the ear of corn, and you could turn it up a little and go after it.
Well, we only got 2 out of 3 on that. We were supposed to get all, and that means that Heinz 57 sends $57 to Dr. Goldbach and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now, our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer. Well, that's all we have time for. We'll have Mr. Grauer in just a minute. Thank you, Fred Allen. Thank you, Judge Wallace. It's been a nice party. The best wishes of the season to each and every one of our listeners. We've paid out tonight $171 in war bonds and stamps and 2 3/6 of the encyclopedia. Next week, we'll be back at our old stand in our New York studio with Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams. And as our guests, we'll have Moss Hart, author of the distinguished play and now the 20th Century Fox motion picture Winged Victory, and the well-known harmonica virtuoso, Larry Adler. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. And now, our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, with a final word.
Speaking for the H.J. Heinz Company and all of us in these times, perhaps the most fitting words for all peace-loving people are those of Tiny Tim in A Christmas Carol. God bless us, everyone. Now, until next Monday night at the same time, H.J. Heinz Company wishes you good health and good evening.